Welcome to Knowing God in the Word, brought to you by the Word of Truth Ministry, publishers of Seed and Bread. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. This radio program is for the purpose of helping listeners fulfill the greatest need we have as believers, to know God. Today, Nathan will continue his teaching series on how to know God with Knowing the Son. And now, Bible teacher Nathan Johnson.
Thank you very much, Bob. We have been discussing how to know God. And we have seen that getting to know God is our greatest need. And the way to enter into a relationship with and to please God is through faith. Now what we need regarding faith is to believe the record God gave of His Son. We have studied the glorious reality that Jesus is the Christ. And we have studied the marvelous truth of the Father and the Son. And today we will further consider what we mean when we say that Jesus is the Son. Now, when I say that Jesus as the Son of God is God, Jesus is God, people will sometimes say to me, well, doesn't the Bible say that Jesus is the only begotten Son of God? And Jesus is God's little boy. And how can someone's little boy be the same as his father? How can Jesus be God? Now these might quote John chapter 1 and verse 14, which says, "And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth." And they would say, see, Christ is the only begotten Son. So does that mean he was begotten by God? That is, he is a created being, as some claim? However, if we would look into this word only begotten and its use in the book of Hebrews, we would see that something is going on with this word that we don't understand. Because in Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 17, it says, "By faith Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises offered up his only begotten son." Now, is Isaac Abraham's only begotten son? No. No, in fact, Isaac had an older half-brother who was also Abraham's son through a different mother, Ishmael. Genesis chapter 16, verse 15. "So Hagar bore Abram a son, and Abram named his son whom Hagar bore Ishmael." Moreover, after his wife Sarah died, Abraham remarried a woman named Keturah after her death, and he had more sons. Genesis 25, verse 1. "Abraham again took a wife, and her name was Keturah, and she bore him Zimran, Jokshan, Medan, Midian, Ishbak, and Shua." Six sons, in other words. Jokshan begat Sheba and Dedan, and the sons of Dedan were Asherim, Letushim, and Leumim. And the sons of Midian were Ephah, Epher, Hanok, Abida, and Eldah. All these were the children of Keturah. So Abraham, not only was Isaac not Abraham's only begotten son, Abraham had seven other sons besides Isaac. So if Isaac was not Abraham's only begotten son, and yet Hebrews 11 verse 17 is translated that he was his only begotten son, well, something has to be wrong with this translation, only begotten. So what does this word, only begotten, mean? Well, remember, the Bible was not written in English, it was written in Greek. And the Greek word in Hebrews 11, 17 and John 1, 14 that's translated only begotten is the Greek word monogenes, spelled M-O-N-O-G-E-N-E-S. Yet I do not believe monogenes is the proper word for only begotten. The proper word for only begotten should be monogenitas. And that would come from mono, which means alone. Have you ever said, I'll do it mano a mano? In other words, all on my own. Well, mono means alone. And genitas means to be generated or born. So monogenitas would mean only begotten, only generated, only born. But monogenes comes from mano, which means alone, and ginomai, which means to be. And therefore, monogenes doesn't mean only begotten, it means to be alone. And as we look at it in context, I believe it means unique. To be monogenes means to be unique. Now, it is true that an only child is indeed unique. And the biblical author Luke uses monogenes for someone's unique only child three times. In Luke chapter 7 and verse 12, says of Jesus, "And when he came near the gate of the city, behold, a dead man was being carried out, the only, the unique son of his mother, and she was a widow. And a large crowd from the city was with her." So he uses monogenes there for an only child. Same thing in Luke 8:42. "For he," that is this man, "had an only daughter about 12 years of age, and she was dying. But as he went, the multitude thronged him." So this man had a monogenes, an only daughter. In Luke 9:38, "Suddenly a man from the multitude cried out, saying, 'Teacher, I implore you, look on my son, for he is my only child.'" And there, monogenes again means an only child. Yet a child could be unique for other reasons than that he was the only child you had. Isaac, we already saw in Hebrews 11:17, is called monogenes, unique. And yet Abraham had seven other sons. Well, what was unique about Isaac? It was not that he was Abraham's only child, but he was unique nevertheless. Genesis 21, verse 9 says, "And Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian," of course it's referring to Ishmael, "whom she had born to Abraham, scoffing," in other words, at Isaac, at his coming of age ceremony. "Therefore she said to Abraham, 'Cast out this bondwoman and her son, for the son of this bondwoman shall not be heir with my son, namely with Isaac.' And the matter was very displeasing in Abraham's sight because of his son. But God said to Abraham, 'Do not let it be displeasing in your sight because of the lad or because of your bondwoman. Whatever Sarah has said to you, listen to her voice. For in Isaac your seed shall be called.'" So you see that Isaac was the son of promise. God had promised Abraham before he had any children, as he was getting older and older and continued to not have children, he promised him a seed, an offspring that would be like the sand of the seashore, like the stars in heaven. You couldn't count them. And that seed would not come through Ishmael. That seed would not come through the six sons of Keturah. That seed was to come through Isaac, the unique son, the son of promise. So when the author of Hebrews, in Hebrews 11:17, calls Isaac, Abraham's monogenes son, he means his unique son, the son of promise, and not his only begotten son at all. So when we come to Christ being called the monogenes son of God, and he's called that only by John in the New Testament, only three authors use monogenes, the author of Hebrews, Luke, who uses it for only children, and John, who uses it only for Jesus Christ. Well, John means unique son. Let's see that in John 1:14 is the first time he uses it. "And the Word came into being as flesh and tabernacled among us, and we discerned his glory as an only one from the Father, full of grace and truth." That's the resultant version of John 1:14. And see, Christ was not the only begotten son of the Father, as if the Father generated him like a man generates a child. But he was the only one, the unique one from the Father. Now, there are others in the Bible who are called sons of God. In Genesis 6:2, it talks about the sons of God. In Job chapter 1 and 2, it talks about the sons of God coming before God to present themselves, and Satan comes among them. And you see that the sons of God are angels. Adam is called a son of God. And see, others can be sons of God in that they represent God. But only Jesus Christ is the Son of God. Only he is the unique Son of God who is God in human form. John 1:18, again in the resultant version, "No one has seen God at any time. the monogenes, the only son, or some manuscripts say the only God, the one existing in the bosom of the Father, he unfolds him. So Jesus Christ is the monogenes son, the monogenes God who is in the bosom of the Father. And he is the only one who completely and thoroughly and 100% shows forth God. And I have said that if Jesus Christ ever said, pass the salt, he is so completely identified with God that it was actually God's opinion that the salt should be passed. Now, I suppose if I say pass the salt, God maybe doesn't care one way or the other whether it gets passed. But if Christ said pass the salt, God thought the salt should be passed. And that's because Jesus Christ was God in human form. John 3:16 is the next occurrence of monogenes. It says, for God so loved the world that he gave his monogenes, his only begotten, his unique son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. So we need to believe in the unique, the only son of God, Jesus Christ, to get aeonian life. Now, this verse tells us that God loved the world, and that is the world of Adam's race on earth. And because he loved us so much, he gave his unique son. He gave his unique son for the world, that whoever believes in that son should not perish, should not have to pay for his own wages of sin, but should have aeonian life. And that's the glorious message here. God didn't give his only begotten little boy. He gave his unique son. He gave himself in human form. And John 3:18 tells us, he who believes in him is not condemned. But he who does not believe is condemned already, because he has not believed in the name of the monogenes, the only begotten Son of God. So to believe in Jesus Christ is to not be condemned. To believe in the unique Son of God is to not be condemned. But if anyone refuses to believe in the unique Son of God, refuses to believe the name that God has given him, well, he is already condemned before he even comes into judgment, because he has refused to believe in the record God gave of his unique Son. And the final time John uses this word monogenes is in, not the Gospel, but is in his epistle, 1 John chapter 4 and verse 9. In this, the love of God was manifested toward us, that God has sent his monogenes, his only begotten Son, into the world, that we might live through him. So God sent not his only begotten Son, but his unique Son, the one who is God in human form, his unique Son who represents him completely and thoroughly. He sent him into the world that we might live through him. And I pray that all my listeners know that Son and believe in him. Don't believe that God had a little boy, like you who are fathers of male children might have had a little boy when you got your wife pregnant, or your girlfriend pregnant, or when you became pregnant. No, not that way. This was his unique Son. He was always with God. He existed with God in the beginning, as John 1:1 says. He was the unique Son of God. So monogenes doesn't mean that Christ is begotten, that he's God's little boy. It means that he is the unique representative of God. Now, throughout this, I have been talking about sonship, and I have been assuming that sonship is connected with representation. Now, that's not inherent at all in our English word son. And I'm really getting that from the Hebrew idea of the word son. See, we use our English word son to just mean a male child, just like we use the word daughter to mean a female child. Now, I cannot deny that the Bible uses the word son this way as well. For in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 16, the first occurrence of son, the Lord spoke to the woman, to Isha, who later was named Eve, and he said to her, I will greatly multiply your sorrow and your conception. In pain you shall bring forth sons, it says in Hebrew. Your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you. So he told Eve, Isha, she was going to bring forth sons. And we see that the phrase sons and daughters occurs in Hebrew just like it does in English. Genesis chapter 5 and verse 4 says of Adam, after he begot Seth, the days of Adam were 800 years, and he had sons and daughters. So just like we use son to mean a male child, daughter to mean a female child, Hebrews would use it that way. And yet consider Genesis 6 and verse 2, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that is, the daughters of Adam, that they were beautiful, and they took wives for themselves of all whom they chose. Now I firmly believe that these sons of God were angels, and that these angel men saw the daughters of Adam. They found them beautiful, and contrary to God's wish or God's commandment, they took wives from Adam's daughters. So these sons of God who saw Adam's daughters, were they God's little boys? Well, no, not at all. These were angels. And I believe what this means is not that they were God's children, like God had a wife and had kids, but this means that they were representatives of God. These were his appointed rulers among the angels. And they had authority over things in his creation. And yet they misused their authority and they took the daughters of Adam as wives. Now we see sons of God who, maybe some of whom, didn't abuse their authority in Job chapter 1 and verse 6. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them. So here the sons of God, God's representatives, are presenting themselves to him before his throne, and Satan is among them. So the sons of God, we see, are God's representatives. So in Genesis 6, verse 2, we see that son can mean more than somebody's little boy. Now, the same thing in Genesis 7 and verse 6. Noah was 600 years old when the floodwaters were on the earth. But the Hebrew doesn't say Noah was 600 years old. The Hebrew says Noah was a son of 600 years, which again means a representative. Now, what does this mean, a representative of 600 years? Well, this is true. You know, 600, we don't have anybody who's 600 years old anymore. There isn't a single person on earth who's that old. But take an age, a reasonable age, like 20. There are people who are 20 years old right now. And those people are the current representatives of 20-year-olds. Now, as soon as their 21st birthday comes, they stop being that. But never fear, there are other people who were 19 who, the same day even, will turn 20 and become the new representatives of 20 years old. And once you get up to 40, it's been a long time since you are a representative of a 20-year-old. You were at one point 20 years ago. But still, there are currently people who are 20 years old who represent that age. So the Bible would speak of your age as being a son of that age, because you represented that age at that time for that year. In Genesis 18 and verse 7, an interesting occurrence, it says, Abraham ran to the herd, took a tender and good calf, gave it to a young man, and he hastened to prepare it. Now, calf there in Hebrew is actually a son of cattle. Well, that's what a calf is. He's a son. He's a representative of cattle, of cows. So, son can mean representative. Well, where did this idea of a son being a representative come from? Well, it came from the family system, the family structures that existed in Israel at that day. Your family was not just the people you lived with in your house, but your family was actually a family business. Every family was a family business. And the father, called the patriarch, was the CEO. Now, the father was not just the one who brought home the money, but he was the one who made all the decisions to keep the family business operating, to make sure it was solvent, to make sure you didn't go broke, to make sure that you could stay alive. And so being the patriarch was an incredibly important position. And so it was equally important to ask who is going to take over the family when the patriarch can no longer do it, when he gets too old or when he dies. Well, the next patriarch was called the son. We can see that in Genesis 15:2, where Abraham speaks to God before any child is born to him, and he says, "Lord God, what will you give me, seeing I go childless, and the heir of my house is Eliezer of Damascus?" But in Hebrew, that's the word son. The son of my house is Eliezer of Damascus, a man who isn't even my child. He's the son of my house. He's the next patriarch. Well, since the word son meant the one who was going to represent the father and the fact that he was going to take over for the father and become what the father was, well, the Hebrews therefore would use the word son to describe a person who represented a certain character. Deuteronomy 13:13 in the New King James Version that I use says, "Corrupt men have gone out from among you and enticed the inhabitants of their city, saying, 'Let us go and serve other gods which you have not known.'" Now, corrupt men there in Hebrew is actually sons of Belial. And Belial means corruption or worthlessness. So these people are sons of corruption or sons of worthlessness. Now, that doesn't mean that their father was named Worthlessness or Corruption or even Belial. No, it just means that they represented worthlessness in their character. When the apostles renamed a man named Joseph in Acts 4:36, Joseph, who is also named Barnabas by the apostles, which is translated son of encouragement. So they renamed this guy Joseph Barnabas, which means son of encouragement. Well, why? Well, because he represented encouragement. To be around him, you realize this guy was a great encouragement. Just being around him encourages you. So the word son means somebody who represents, somebody who stands in, who fills an office, who fills a position. And for this reason, we can see that Jesus as the Son of God doesn't mean God's little boy, but it means Jesus as the representative of God. Jesus Christ is the visible form of the invisible God. He represents the God who is not physical or material. Jesus Christ represents that God to the physical, material universe. In other words, the Son of God is God in human form. Now, in the scriptures, many people believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. But did you know that the reason John wrote his gospel is so that you and I would believe that as well? In John 20, verses 30 and 31, it says, "And truly, Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name." So my question for you is, do you believe that Jesus is the Son of God? Do you believe that he is the unique representative of God? The representative of the invisible God in visible material form. Do you believe that Jesus Christ is God in human form? Well, I pray that you do.
We must never diminish our perception of Jesus to be that of God's offspring or God's little boy. It is very important to understand the meaning of the word son as it refers to Jesus. Believing that Jesus Christ is the Son of God is to believe that He is God. Thank you, Nathan, for your lesson on knowing the Son. On our next program, Nathan will continue his teaching series on how to know God with fulfilling the promises. Thank you for joining us today. We trust that you are learning that the more you study God's Word, the more you can know God. For more information on the program, to hear past programs, and for other downloadable material that Nathan has produced, please visit our website at knowinggodintheword.org. We also send out a weekly email newsletter in which Nathan does the same thing he does on this radio program, going verse by verse through the Bible and then discussing what it means. Email Nathan at nathan@knowinggodintheword.org and ask to be placed on this mailing list. You can also write to us with Bible questions or comments. For more Bible study literature by Nathan and other Bible teachers, including Seed and Bread Bible studies, please visit the Word of Truth Ministry at seedandbread.org or write to the Word of Truth Ministry, P.O. Box 1609, Canyon Country, California, 91386. Although your donations are always appreciated, you will not be solicited for funds in any way when you write, so feel free to contact us. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. We have to say so long for now, but we look forward to you joining us next week on Knowing God in the Word.